would like to thank the organizers for putting together this amazing conference. So today I will tell you about some work that we're excited about, where we define a partition function for a volume of space. And this is work in collaboration with Ted Jacobson. So the motivation comes from Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, which provides a low energy window into quantum gravity. And the remarkable thing about this formula is that it not only applies to black holes, where it was originally discovered, but it also applies to cosmological horizons, acceleration horizons, and of course, entanglement wedges. Now, since these horizons all locally look like Rindler space, presumably the these different horizon entropies have the same statistical origin. And there is a claim in the literature in several papers which roughly states the following, that the gravitational entropy is not only associated to the area of black holes or de Sitter horizons, but also to the area of any boundary separating a region of space. So if I have a volume, a spatial volume V with a boundary B, then the claim is that this there is an entropy associated to that boundary B. But in this talk, I would like to give a more precise formulation of this claim and also give a justification using the Euclidean path integral. So, of course, Gibbons and Hawking famously derived the entropy of black holes and de Sitter horizons from a saddle point approximation of the Euclidean quantum gravity partition function. Now, the question I would like to ask in this talk is, can the entropy of any volume of space be derived in a similar way using a saddle point approximation of some path integral? And the answer is yes, otherwise I wouldn't give this talk. And we're going to use the method of so-called constraint instantons. Oops. So this is the outline. I will first briefly review the work by Gibbons and Hawking, and especially apply to the de Sitter space. But I would also like to convey an important argument by Jacobson and Bani Hashemi from last year. So they wrote a really rich and penetrating paper, but I will focus on this interesting argument. And secondly, I will present our recent work. So in their seminal paper, Gibbons and Hawking represented, as you all know, the canonical partition function in quantum gravity as a Euclidean path integral. But what I would like to point out is that in this original paper, they already applied this to the de Sitter space. So in a saddle point approximation, the path integral can be approximated as e to the minus on-shell Euclidean action. And if the saddle geometry is Euclidean de Sitter space, which is a round sphere, whose radius is set by the curvature scale, then the action actually takes the following form. It's minus a over 4g, h bar, where L is the de Sitter radius. So it's minus the de Sitter entropy. And the reason that there is no energy term here, so usually the action is related to the free energy, the reason that there is no energy is because there is no boundary in Euclidean de Sitter space where you can define the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian vanishes. Another thing to note is that the temperature dependence drops out. So the action is independent of the temperature. Now, the question is, what is the meaning? So they did this computation, but what is really the meaning of the partition function? And in which ensemble are we computing this answer? So in particular, since there is no boundary, there is no temperature that you can fix. And the resolution that Ted and Batul introduced last year is they considered an artificial so-called York boundary, because Jimmy York introduced this in the context of black holes a long time ago. And on this boundary, they can define an energy or a Hamiltonian using the so-called Brown-York energy. So this, in this example here, is a spatial slice of the static patch of the de Sitter space, and you introduce this, this boundary at some fixed radius, and you put some boundary conditions on that boundary, so Dirichlet boundary conditions, for instance. And then what you want to consider, so you want to, using this boundary, you can fix the temperature there, and then you can define a canonical ensemble. And then you want to study the limit where this boundary shrinks to zero size, so that you recover the entire de Sitter space, and you try to recover the Gibbons-Hawking result. Now, this geometry has topology of a disk times d minus 2 sphere, because this is like a radial distance, but it has to be rotated around the Euclidean circle, so that's how you get the disk. And if you take the limit where the boundary vanishes, then you recover the SD topology of Euclidean de Sitter space. Okay, so the canonical partition function with a York boundary is the trace of e to the minus beta h, where h is the Brown-York energy. And what they showed is that in the vanishing boundary limit, so where r goes to zero, this Brown-York Hamiltonian actually vanishes. And it's roughly because the area element vanishes much faster than any other quantity, like the extrinsic curvature, for instance. And in that case, the path integral is really an integral over all metrics on the sphere, on a topological sphere, but the Euclidean de Sitter space has minimal action, and so that's the one that dominates the path integral. And so since the Hamiltonian vanishes, you really get trace of one, so you get the trace over the entire Hilbert space, so you get the dimension of the Hilbert space, of states surrounded by a horizon, or states of a ball, because this is really a ball. And so since that in the zero loop saddle approximation, that's e to the s, you get that dimension of Hilbert space is e to the s. All right. So now we want to apply this to any volume of space. As I already pointed out in the introduction, the equality between area and entropy has been suggested that it applies to any topological ball, let's say. So I want to consider here a topological ball with some boundary sphere. Now, in the case of the Sitter space, the size of this ball is set by the cosmological constant. So it's set by the saddle, basically. Now, if you take the cosmological constant to zero, then the entropy blows up. So you get an infinite entropy. So that's roughly the entropy of Rinter space, because it has an infinite horizon, because it's a plane. But we want to consider finite subregions. And so somehow we have to fix the size of the subregion in our path integral. And so what we do is we fix the spatial volume of our subregion by adding a constraint in the path integral that all these spatial slices have a particular volume V. And so we define a partition function, which again is the dimension of the trace over the entire Hilbert space of the identity. And so this is then a dimension of the Hilbert space of geometry, so it's spatial volume V. Okay, so now I'm going to represent this as a path integral, but I have to include the constraint that the spatial volumes are fixed. But before I do that, I first want to explain what is the topology that we integrate over. And it's very similar to the de Sitter case, but I want to emphasize it again. So we consider a spatial topological D minus 1 ball whose boundary has topology of a sphere. And if you, since we're taking the trace, you have to rotate this around the Euclidean circle. So you have to rotate this ball around this fixed point set as d minus 2, which is the Euclidean horizon. And if you do that, you get a topological D sphere. So it's easy to picture this in d is 2. So in this case, a ball is just this line, and the Euclidean horizon consists of S0, which consists of two points. And if you rotate this line around the Euclidean circle while keeping these points fixed, then you get a two-sphere. And this generalizes to higher dimensions as well. Then you get a topological D-sphere. Okay. So here is the constrained path integral. And I'm only going to consider GR, Einstein gravity, and some effective field theory approach. And lambda here is a Lagrange multiplier that enforces the constraint. And the constraint is that all these topological balls have the same volume V. So this is the proper volume on a spatial slice. So we foliate the sphere by D minus one balls at a constant phi, and phi is the Euclidean time. And so these balls at fixed Euclidean time have induced metric gamma AB, and N is defined, where N is defined in this way. You can think about it as the lapse. Okay, and notice that all these balls have the same volume V, because we integrate here over d phi. So they all, for each phi, they have the same volume V. So next, we want to do a saddle point approximation, and we want to, first find the saddle point equations. And because of this extra term, the saddle point equations are not just Einstein gravity with zero stress tensor, but there is an extra term coming from this constraint. So the saddle point equations are the Einstein equations sourced by an effective stress tensor, which is that of a perfect fluid with zero energy density. So the stress energy takes the following form. So it's an effective stress energy. So it's lambda over N. So lambda was the Lagrange multiplier times gamma AB. Okay. So these are the saddle point equations, and now we want to find the solutions. And we're just going to look for the simplest solutions, namely those that are static and spherically symmetric, because presumably those have the minimal action. That's exactly what happened in the De Sitter case. Okay, so this is our ansatz for the metric. So we have this lapse and this function h of r. So h of r is determined by the phi phi component of the equations of motion, and in this case, this is just zero because this is the induced metric. And so then you just have the standard Einstein equations with constant curvature. So this, if you have zero cosmological constant, this h is just one. And furthermore, n is determined by the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation because we have a perfect fluid. So for those who don't know about these equations, they determine, those are the equations of motion whose solutions are static, spherically symmetric stars that consist of perfect fluid. But in our case, we also have a perfect fluid, but we have different boundary conditions compared to the star. So the star, perfect fluid star, has zero pressure at the boundary, whereas in our case, we impose the condition that the lapse vanishes at the boundary, which is the Euclidean horizon, which is at r is rv. So in our case, the lapse vanishes at the boundary, which means that the pressure diverges. So that's very different from a standard fluid star. And you can already notice that because the pressure diverges at the horizon, the curvatures are going to blow up at the horizon. But this divergence in the curvature is not that of a conical singularity, so we do remove the conical singularity, or there's no conical singularity if you impose this condition, so that's the second boundary condition. So we smoothen out the conical singularity, but then there's still another curvature singularity, basically. Okay. So if you impose these boundary conditions, solve the equations of motion, you get this metric that you've all seen in here. So this is the solution for zero cosmological constant. And the horizon is at r is rv, and rv is determined by the volume v, the constraint. Okay, so this saddle has topology SD. It's actually conformally flat. And as I said, it has a curvature singularity of 1 over the distance to the horizon, near the horizon. But even though it has a curvature singularity, the on-shell action is finite. So if you compute the on-shell action, lo and behold, you get minus the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So that means in the zero loop approximation, the partition function of a fixed volume is really e to the a over 4g. And this shows that finite volumes of space also have a Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, or rather, they have this logarithm of dimension of Hilbert space, a over 4g. Now, there is a similar saddle for a non-zero cosmological constant. And in that case, the spatial ball is embedded for a negative cosmological constant, it's embedded in a hyperbolic space. And for a positive cosmological constant, it's embedded in a sphere. So here is the Penrose diagram of the Sitter space. So this spatial ball can have any size. So at some spatial slice of the Sitter space, it's basically this red slice. But for in the case of a positive cosmological constant, there are significant differences, which is basically implied by this picture. So if you are if the ball is larger than the de Sitter horizon, then the entropy decreases as the volume V increases, because the area shrinks in this direction, whereas the volume increases. So you also see that in this picture. So if you at this line, the spatial ball coincides with the boundary of the ball coincides with the de Sitter horizon. So in that case, the saddle is completely smooth, and you recover the Euclidean de Sitter space. But if you make the volume larger, the area actually goes down. And if you if the volume coincides with the entire slice of the Sitter space, the area actually vanishes, and there is no saddle if the volume is larger than the full spatial slice of the Sitter space. Now, thirdly, if you integrate over all volumes, then you have to recover the old Gibbons-Hawking result. So you, if you integrate this in the saddle point approximation e to the a over 4g over all volumes from 0 to v, then the result, the partition function is dominated by the de Sitter saddle, because that has maximum area. And in that case, you recover the Gibbons-Hawking entropy. So those are some interesting aspects of the positive cosmological constant saddle. Okay, so back to the curvature singularity. Now, this Bekenstein-Hawking result for the action seems reasonable, but as I said, there is a curvature singularity, and what do we do with it? Now, despite this singularity, maybe the result could still be reliable, provided that the corrections to the entropy are small. And so I will give two proposals for why the corrections could be small. So first of all, in an effective field theory approach, you should actually include higher curvature corrections. And suppose they would regularize the saddle, so the curvature scalar would saturate at some value. So this rho is the distance to the horizon at some value ls. So the curvature scalar would be, in that case, would be 1 over rv, that's the horizon radius, times ls. It doesn't blow. Suppose it doesn't blow up, but it saturates at some value. And then we can show that this doesn't, then the curvature corrections don't significantly alter the entropy. And they still remain consistent with effective field theory. So how does this work? So if you have an r squared term in the action, and r cubed, and r box r, then the walled entropy takes the following form. And if you then compute this at the horizon, you get these corrections. So these corrections are small if L is smaller than rv, so then this is smaller than 1. And this term is smaller than this term if L is smaller than ls. Now, another option could be that there is an unknown, or maybe it's string UV completion, which is not an effective field theory, so that the UV completion exists. But in that case, supposedly, this also doesn't change the entropy significantly, because the UV completion is only relevant in the small region surrounding the horizon, and this small region doesn't contribute much to the action. In fact, in a very tiny region, the action is actually almost zero. Now, to conclude, the partition function for a volume of space is the dimension of the quantum gravity Hilbert space of a topological ball with a fixed proper volume. And the dimension of the Hilbert space in the saddle point approximation is given by the semi-classical Bekenstein-Hawking entropy corresponding to the boundary of the ball. And this result reflects the holographic nature of non-perturbative quantum gravity in a finite volume of space. So for future directions, we would like to understand better these higher curvature corrections and whether they regularize the curvature singularity. Secondly, we would like to understand better whether this constrained partition function maybe gives a non-perturbative derivation of Jacobson's maximal entanglement hypothesis. And thirdly, maybe we could impose different constraints. So we already know that fixing the space-time volume instead of spatial volume gives a smooth saddle, so then there's no curvature singularity. But the question is there a Hilbert space interpretation of this constraint? Okay, so with that, I'd like to ask, thank you for your attention.
Are there questions?
Was it essential that the topology was a ball? I mean, if I wanted to know the entropy of a annulus or something, would it not work?
I suppose you could generalize it to that case, but we didn't consider that. So I mean, I haven't studied that.
There's an old paper of Polchinski arguing that the force of your partition function is minus e to the entropy. I was wondering if that shows up here, if that's what the status of that
minus
is.
Or entropy or minus?
Yeah, when you include the one-loop determinant, there's some factors of I, and there's an overall minus sign, minus e to the s. I'm wondering if that shows up here and whether it should bother us, or whether maybe it's fixed by this way of doing it, or...
In what setting is the? Yeah, we don't have this minus sign, so
it's from the one-loop determinant, so it's from some zero modes in the one-loop determinant, I think.
Yeah, we didn't include the one-loop determinant here, so that would be interesting to include, and then maybe we could compare. Yeah, but we don't see this minus sign as of yet.
Yes, Matt.
Leo, go ahead and unmute.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the talk. I have a rather naive question. So you fix the volume in your path integral, right? And then you perform a saddle point approximation. The area that you get, is it the area computed in the metric from the saddle point? Or because like the value of the volume is fixed, but like if I integrate over metrics, I would like not think that an area is really fixed as well.
Yeah, the area is not fixed in the path integral, but it's determined by the saddle. So it's the area of the boundary of the ball of the saddle.
At the saddle point of your path integral.
Yeah, and it's determined in terms of the volume V that is fixed in the path integral.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Could you maybe comment on what is the restriction on going to maybe more dynamical solutions and not just like the TOV equations are only for static spherically symmetric cases, but if we want to do something like put angular momentum in or something that changes the static nature, does this generalize?
Well, I think you should still look at stationary solutions, mm-hmm. But it might be possible to generalize it, also to change maybe the topology. So for instance, including a black hole in the middle. Yeah, I mean, we only scratched the surface here. We only looked at static spherically symmetric mm-hmm. solutions. So maybe it's possible to generalize it.
Pranav, go ahead and unmute.
Thank you. My question was exactly about this static spherically symmetric solution issue. The volume constraint on its own seems like a very flexible constraint that could accommodate many saddle point solutions. Do you have some sort of intuition for why you would believe this one to be dominant?
Why the static spherically symmetric one is dominant over other saddles? Is that the question?
Yes, if the other saddles exist, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a proof of that in this case of the sitter space, which is a special case. We do have a proof that is has minimal action because it's a round sphere and the other saddles in 5 to 9 dimensions have lower action. But in this case, we don't have a proof of that. But it's just, yeah, based on intuition that the most symmetric one might have the minimal action. But it would be nice to have a better proof.
Jihoon?
Okay, thank you.
So the entropy as a function of the volume plot that you had seems intuitive from the perspective of entanglement entropy, but is there a state counting interpretation for why this behavior should persist?
We don't have a microscopic picture of the sitter space, I guess it follows in the saddle point approximation from our partition function, but we don't have a real estate counting interpretation of that. But it's interesting that if you increase the volume, then the number of states goes down, basically. And if you, at some point, increasing more volume, the entropy is zero.
Okay, thank you. Thanks once again.